These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The looming presence of Felger, not in the a-hole chair, but it has traveled with me. So this is the program. We will continue with your Celtics calls here off the top of the hour. We have some Red Sox sound to get to in a few minutes, but let's just continue with this good time. Bert in Connecticut, if you could. Jimmy, pop him up on line six. Bert in Connecticut is up next with Felger and Maz. Hi, Bert.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
Good. I'm going to upset some green teamers here, but and I wanted to wait and see first how Haywood was going to play with this team. But right now, this team needs Anthony Davis. And you got to, anybody, I was going to say Tatum and Kyrie, but even if you got to get rid of Tatum, you have to do it. I mean, you look at these other teams. Maz, you were talking about, you know, LeBron and the Magic and all that that he brings. You need a winner, all right? And you have to have a big three, and this guy's a three. And whatever you have to do to get him, I love Tatum. I really think he's got a future. But you know what? You want this thing, you got to get it. And Danny, that's what you got to do. And
Thanks for the call, guys. Let me ask you this, Maz. Do they need a big guy? Do they need a, you know, even if Gordon Hayward is back and is on the team and now you've got two of your three, does the third guy have to have size? Do you watch a game like last night with Jordan and say, this team just can't live without a better big guy?
I mean, to me, you need someone to protect the rim, yes. Yeah, you do. And again, a real rim protector. Now, again, you say, well, Golden State doesn't have one. Okay. I mean, they do at points. And the other thing is, it might be the most prolific shooting team of all time. So we're going to use Golden State as a model. Like, okay, so let's build a team in the, you know, in the image of Golden State. Where are you going to get Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant?
Like that, yeah, so you're saying, right, they're an aberration.
They are, I think, generally. And I know the games play differently now, but ideally, I think what you want is a rim protector who's got an offensive game, which ultimately is what Garnett was. That's what Garnett was.
Rick in the car joins us next on the Seas. Hi, Rick.
Hi, guys. Listen, I think what's really kind of with the Celtics, the deal with the Celtics, is I don't think they were really as good as 24-4. And I don't think they're as bad as what's been going on the last month or so. Jaylen Brown worries me, though. And I thought, like Maz said, it was going to be his shooting. He's actually improved his shooting. I thought he was going to be one of those guys that could get to the rim, was going to get fouls. If you watch, I watch every game. His handle is horrible.
It is.
Horrible.
It's horrible. He loses the ball so easily sometimes. And this is the regular season. Like you said, Felger, guess what's coming? Real defense.
So, Rick, I'm with you on Jaylen Brown. Like, I had always put Jaylen Brown ahead of Jason Tatum, but Jaylen Brown has stopped getting better.
And Tatum's handles has been a mess, too. Even on easy layups, it's like there's olive oil on the ball. I don't know what the hell's going on there.
So Tatum, I look at, I say, okay, rookie, hit the wall. You know, like, I mean, I can rationalize that. Tatum shouldn't be doing, Jaylen Brown shouldn't be doing that as much. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like you'd get to this point of the year and you'd see him really making that jump, and he's not making that jump. I feel like he's going the other way, Maz.
Yeah, you know, to me it feels like, I don't know how great his game sense is. And when I say that, there was one possession last night, and it was late in the game. I don't know if you guys remember it. He tried to go to the basket, and he dribbled behind his back to cross over, and all the defender did was stop. The defender just stopped, and Brown just ran right into him and lost the ball. I mean, it was a brutal play. It was, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to dribble behind my back, and this guy will probably make a mistake, and I'll go in and dunk it. And there was no, again, it just felt to me like it was, he decided when he had the ball what he was going to do, and the defender just stood there, and he ran right into him and gave it up. It was awful.
Kenny's in Framingham on our Rondo argument. Go ahead, Kenny.
Mike, do you have any idea how wrong you are about this?
No, I don't.
Do you know how many minutes Sam Cassell played in the clinching game?
What, when you won by 38 points?
Zero.
Well, but what does that mean, when you won by 38 points?
Rondo had 21, 7, 8, and 6.
Oh, he won you the championship. That's right. You wouldn't have won that game. You mean, you're talking about game 6 in the Garden.
No. He was just the perfect fit for the team.
Oh, please.
He played three Hall of Famers. He's a passing first point guard, and he was a perfect fit.
He was a non-factor on that team, Kenny. He was maybe the sixth or seventh most important guy on that team.
You didn't watch the games. Come on, be honest.
I was there. I was forced to watch the games.
Well, what the hell were you watching?
Rondo run around, not do anything. and play a lot of minutes, but trade for House, they trade for Cassell. I mean, you tell me, who is more important on that team, Posey or Rajon Rondo?
Oh, Posey, please.
Okay, and so now he's...
Yeah, with regard to Kenny, I would say I'd have been the perfect point guard for that team. All I had to do was just pass to the guys who can shoot. Like, what's so hard about that? I covered those finals. I covered that year. I was around that team a lot that year. They had to hold Rondo's hand that season. There's a reason they went out and got Cassell. He was okay. Rondo was okay. He wasn't bad. But it's not like he gave you any kind of performance that you would look at and say, wow, where would they have been without the point guard? Please, pluck a guy off the street. I can go to the Y and find a guy who can pass the ball to those three and win a championship.
Yeah, I don't want to be disingenuous. Big three, Posey and Perk, were more important. But he's there, and he's got the ring, which IT doesn't. So I'm siding with Rondo in this one.
Just because you're biased. But that's fine. Now, if you want to talk about Rondo... Like a few years later, he was a much more prominent piece to the team.
Sure.
And then when the big three sort of cycled out and it was his team, you know what happened? It all imploded because the guy is one of the biggest jerks in pro sports. And that now, that's the guy that you're hitching your wagon to carry the torch for the Celtics?
No, it's just in this one instance, this one singular instance, Michael, that Rondo is right. Why can't you admit that? Why can't you admit that one time Rajon Rondo is right? Oh, wait, sure that's right, because you have an agenda against Rondo that you won't admit to.
Yes, that humankind shares, and that is no one likes him. Yes, I along with the rest of humanity, looks at him and goes, you suck. You're a bad guy. So, right, I have a hard time. If Rajon Rondo stands on one side of an argument, I have a hard time taking that side of the argument. You're
proving
absolutely
once
right,
again, but you're the most objective man in the market.
Whoever said he's objective, he is angry. Yeah, I think Rondo should walk around with a T-shirt every day that says PUD. That's what I think. PUD. Just walk around the shirt that says PUD. I'm a PUD.
Brent and Waltham, Jimmy, help me pop him up on line 5, please. Brent and Waltham, you're up next on Felger and Maz. Go ahead.
I'm just honestly surprised you don't think Marcus Smart has more to do with this collapse that we've seen from the Celtics.
Oh, it's a factor.
It's effort. It's all effort. I mean, if you watch the game last night, the L.A. freaking Clippers are scoring at will on you. Not the Lob City, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul Clippers, the Island of Misfit Toys, the trade fodder of players that no one wanted was scoring at will against you, waltzing to the rim as the Celtics softly fouled them on their way there. I'm not saying Marcus Smart is a savior. I'm just saying he'd be making a difference. And
no question, Brent. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it the other day. I'll say it again. I mean, you lose Marcus Smart, you lose some of your DNA. You do. I felt it when we talked about him at the trade deadline, and I think you see it in these games. And not that, you know, he's not defending DeAndre Jordan at the rim, obviously, but it's just something about mentality, Maz, and mindset. The Celtics feel like they've been soft. They've been soft the last couple of weeks.
Well, look, and a guy like that brings attitude, right? You know, and when a guy like that starts running around and, you know, digging in, you can't help but do your part, too. So I do. I think they've missed Smart. I'm starting to think it's getting a little overplayed. Like, all of a sudden, just plug in Marcus Smart and they're not going to hold the Clippers to 85 points.
No, the perimeter defense was pretty much fine last night. They got killed in the paint. You know, like last night, yes, okay, overall, they miss him. But last night, I look at a guy like Horford, who looked lead-legged in the game, and people are continually driving by him. There's no contestant in the lane at all. Like, that, to me, is like, all right, it's on this guy tonight.
See, Mike,
all right, Jimmy, go ahead. And so now Jimmy's going to rip on Greg Monroe, just to transfer from his guy, Al Horford, who's been invisible.
He's a hack, blah, blah, blah. I hate Greg Monroe, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, he does. He is so, my God, he is so unathletic. Really, it's like putting Beetle in the paint, for crying out loud. Like, you see him in there, he can't do anything.
But they use the exception in their buyout money on him.
Ooh, who are you criticizing there, Jimmy?
Everyone. Oh. Everyone's on the list.
See, Mike, you asked...
Who do you mean?
Go ahead.
Well, you had to jump and get a big man because you were worried about your size, so you used your injury exception for Gordon Hayward on Greg Monroe. You couldn't have waited for Bellinelli or somebody who can actually score the basketball.
Who's you?
The Celtics management. Makes you feel
name.
Better, Mike?
So, Ainge.
Go ahead.
You asked earlier, are you more concerned about the offense or the defense with the Celtics? And honestly, with me, it's the offense. Like, I look at the defense and say, when it comes time, they'll play hard.
Effort, right.
Yeah, they'll play hard. Defense is totally about effort, except for the, you know, the big guy at the rim. That's an ability thing, and they lack that, but they've lacked that all year, and they played good defense early. So I look at it and say, they'll get smart back, and the games will mean something to them again, and, you know, they'll play perimeter defense. That will come. I'm not worried about that. I am not sure where they're going to get secondary scoring once teams start digging in on them. Other than Irving, where are they going to get it? And I just... You know, that's why Brown and Tatum to me are as important as they are.
But and also how the ball doesn't swing as much as it used to. It doesn't feel like to me. It just...
No, because they've gotten lazy on offense and defense. That's what's happened since London.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blunt force trauma to run him right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, we could have had more fun. I think we still enjoyed it, but we could have had more fun. I think through the rough times, I think those were the times when we could have had a little more fun instead of being down so much. So we had a rough patch this year. I feel like maybe we learned from last year and we can continue to enjoy the game and maybe we get out of it faster.
Boy, they're sure concerned about their fun. And I just want to say down there, because we heard the same thing from Aaron Boone yesterday with the Yankees. Seems like these baseball players are really concerned about having fun. Not enough fun last year, Maz. That was Mookie Betts who spoke.
Well, so this part of it bugs me a little bit too. And look, I get it. Okay, I get it. The culture in baseball is different than football or hockey. I mean, you play every day, it's a long season, and so if you have to approach it with this, like, put your nose to the grind attitude, it can be hard, harder than it needs to be. So you do have to pace yourself a little bit. I get that, and you have to find ways to make it a little easier on yourself and enjoy it. All of that I get. What I don't like, though, is I still don't feel like any of these guys, and now I'm including Betts. Bogaerts, to me, is a borderline lost cause. Like, I've just come to Bogaerts and say, he's a nice guy. But he doesn't have it in him to be nasty. He just doesn't. It's who he is, and I'm almost willing to accept it with him because I think it's who he is. Betts, I think, is capable of more. And I hear Betts say it, and see, I don't believe him. I think Betts has got an edge to him and an intensity to him, and for whatever reason, he doesn't want to grab the team by the throat in the clubhouse. I don't care what he says publicly. You can talk all you want about having fun, but I want a guy who's going to get angry when they lose. I think he's got it in him, and I find myself more frustrated by him than Bogaerts.
How about just the whole, do you think Betts and Bogaerts threw Farrell under the bus today? Or stopped short of throwing him under the bus? Or, you know, they sort of brushed up against the stuff from last year, right?
I think that was about Farrell. I do. I think it was about Farrell. Maybe there's a David Price element in there, too, although I think, you know, they look up to Price, which, again, is part of the problem with the clubhouse makeup. But I think that all these guys had a hard time connecting with Farrell. I think he communicated with them poorly. They didn't relate. And now maybe Cora will. It already feels like in some ways Cora's off to a good start there. And, you know, a little later this hour, you know, we want to play some sound from Cora today because he said a couple of things that I actually found to be fairly pointed.
Oh, and, we'll do it now.
Oh, okay. Well, he was talking about, for example, Xander Bogaerts and the impact the new hitting coaches could have on Bogaerts. And Jimmy, this is cut number five, core number five, and the Bogaerts' approach. So the general question was, you know, how do you get it out of Bogaerts? And pay attention to where he ends up.
Timmy and Andy, they're working on a few things to put him in a better position with his swing, his posture, and another thing. We can't have bad takes. If you're a good fastball hitter and you take a fastball right down the middle, that's a bad take. You know, don't just take pitches just to take pitches.
So that end part, you know, fine. The hitting coaches are working with him, working on his posture, drive the ball, blah 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 blah. But we also can't have him taking fastballs down the middle, even if it's the first pitch. So what the hell's he doing? Swing the bat. Stop being so passive. Like, to me, that's a fairly pointed comment. He's in his first camp with the team. He barely knows the player. So now it does tell me that he's probably communicated with the player over the winter. He's already built some sort of relationship with him. And he can say to Bogaerts, look, we can talk all you want about where your hands are and your positioning. But if you keep going up there taking fastballs down the middle and you're down 0-2, what do you think's going to happen? So I like that comment. Because to me, that's addressing it directly. Stop taking so many freaking fastballs down the middle. Let's start there, okay? You got the ability. We know you've got the ability. The other thing is he was asked about the base running, and Jimmy, this is number four. Go ahead.
One thing for sure, We have to be better in the base pass. That's important. The value of the outs. It's always been like that in this game, but where we at now with the guys that are throwing, it's very important to value every out.
Again, stop being an asshat on the bases. Don't do stupid things. You can be aggressive without being stupid. This is something that Farrell sort of threw into one big pile last year. You know, the outs are byproduct of the aggressiveness. Wrong. No, they're not. You can be both. The Arizona Diamondbacks proved it. They were one of the better base-running teams in the league based on the metrics. And at the same time, they didn't get thrown out a lot, and they took extra bases. So I do feel like, now look, that one is sort of an obvious one to pick at, but I feel at least like Cora is communicating directly with his players about it. Because if he's saying it publicly, he has to have said it privately.
Well, so I mean, this goes back to the key question with the team, and that is, I think they're just relying on the new manager to come. I think they're relying on Farrell being gone to be what cures all their problems.
You might be,
I mean,
right.
Honestly. You know, I was going to say Cora coming in, but it's really not just Cora. It's getting Farrell out of there changes everything. I mean, that's what they've done nothing on the roster, nothing. And so what else could it be? Like, what else are they expecting in terms of improvement? And they're just expecting these guys to perform better. Because Farrell's not in the office, who they can't stand the sight of, and that's just going to get everyone to play better. And, I mean, I guess that could work, but I don't know if that's all you got.
No, they're short. Go ahead.
No, and what? I mean, it's like, okay, so they're happy. So they show up and they're happy. Does that mean that they're going to play better when it matters most at the end of the year? I don't know how those two things equate.
No, they're short on talent, too. They get talent, but they need a little more, especially given what they're going up against in the league. The power shortage is real. Even if Bogaerts hits for power, what's the ceiling? 25? Like, he's not going to get to 35. He's not that kind of player. And Mookie Betts, realistically, what's the ceiling? I would put it somewhere in the same area. Now, he got to 31 a couple of years ago, I think it was. But realistically, he's not going much higher than that. I mean, look at the size of him, and look at where he hits his home runs. He's not so they need more power. But I do think you're getting, just hearing the way Cora talked today, and I'm not telling you this is the solution, okay? I'm just telling you that I can already sense a difference. Like, how would John Farrell have answered those two questions?
Jimmy, I don't know. Do you have any ideas?
I mean, it would have been one big, corporate bullcrap answer tied into all sorts of big words that made no sense, a bunch of gobbledygook. And at least with Cora, and look at,
overall, he probably had his best stuff of the season.
Yeah, so it's just, Farrell to me always felt like he was reading from a press release. And at least with Cora, I say, hey, what do you think about Bogaerts? Well, they're working with him, but I'll tell you what, it'll start by avoiding the bad takes and start taking fastballs down the middle.
Fresh and powerful.
At least I feel like he's a human being, and maybe that'll make them a little bit better. They're still short on talent, but I'm feeling a little bit better about Cora and the way he's communicating with his players.
Okay.
In terms of shape to his secondary pitches?
Exactly. How could it be worse? So, like, I think that, I think that take there, Maz, is predictable, meaning you just knew there was going to be a fresh feeling because Farrell's out.
Sure,
and people are going to be liking the new guy and not liking the old guy. And I just think that's an automatic. What I'm curious about is how the team is banking on that being the difference, like that. And it does sort of bug me when I hear Betts or Bogaerts or any of these guys sort of talk about that as like the reason. So wait a minute, you weren't happy, or you didn't. I mean. So you can dislike Farrell, but he put you in the lineup every single day, and you hit at the top of the order. So what? And did he take you out of games? Did he bench you? Did he take away at bats? Like what? How did Farrell being Farrell get in the way of you succeeding when it mattered in the playoffs? And when I hear an undercurrent of sort of passing the buck or sort of blaming it on that, I think that's weak, and I think that's part of the problem with the team. Not liking Farrell had nothing to do with the way Bogaerts hit in the postseason. Nothing.
Mike, they're soft. They're soft. So now, see, but this is kind of the corner they painted themselves into. This nucleus that they have is not good enough. There's something missing. And when I say nucleus, I'm talking about the positional players. I'm talking about Bradley, Bogaerts, Betts. Benintendi I'll leave out of it right now because he's only a year in the league, and we'll see what happens. It feels to me like there should be some room for growth there. Although, frankly, on the bases, he's the son of Psycho. He's brutal on the bases. He feels like a knucklehead to me half the time. But again, we'll give him some latitude. But the positional guys, that core, Betts, Bogarts, Bradley, and I really shouldn't even include Bradley. Not good enough. They're not good enough. There's not enough edge there. There's not enough accountability there. There's not enough anger there. But they've painted themselves into the corner with this group where all of a sudden they have to say, well, this is what we have. So what do? Is John Farrell the right guy for this group? Or do we have to try to get more out of them? Because look, on Bogarts, and I said this to you in the email this morning, I'm starting to wonder with Bogarts whether they've already missed the bus. If they were going to trade Bogarts last offseason, or this offseason was the time to do it. If you keep Bogarts the whole year, so there is the possibility they could move him at the deadline still. But if you keep Bogarts the whole year, you are going to get into the offseason before his final year with the Red Sox. He will be a free agent at the end of 2019. Who's going to give you anything for a Scott Boras client that is underachieved going into the final year of his control?
Nothing.
You're getting Zippo. So they've committed to Bogarts now. Like, you got to find a way to... Now, I would have moved Bogarts. I told you that. I'd have made him a centerpiece of a deal during the offseason. They didn't do that. So now you just have to hope that the manager taps in, because otherwise, where do they go?
The whining. You know, I'm reading from Scott Lauber's piece on ESPN. With the unrelenting calls from manager John Farrell's head, Jimmy, and among fans in the media and among fans on sports talk radio, the embattled skipper seemed to lose touch with some players. It all ended up to a joyless slog through a six-month season. Quote, and if you just played some of these quotes, you know, forgive me, but they sort of blend together. I think there was just tension in the room as far as if things were down, Betts said. We could have had more fun, again with the fun. Through the rough times, I think those are the times when we could have had a little more fun instead of being down so much. It wasn't fun, said Bogarts. We had a lot of stuff going on last year, to be honest. We all live and learn. We just can't sit back and keep reminding ourselves about the past. That's not something we want to do. It's just, that's why you've lost six of your last seven playoff games? Because it wasn't more fun?
Well, and the other thing, Mike, is they still won the division. Like, what are you talking about? You won the division. What happened in the playoffs then? You get your asses kicked.
Let's get an update from Murray and pick this up on the other side. We'll continue with your Celtics and your Red Sox calls.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
I think just tension in the locker room as far as if things are down. We have to find a way to smile and go out and refocus on the game now versus kind of what's been going on. I think this year will be a little different. I'm going to approach things a little differently as far as, you know, if I'm not playing well or if we're losing and whatnot, I can do my best to try and find a way to get everybody back happy, smiling, excited, and going to play.
Win, and then everything else sort of takes care of itself. But, you know, in the same token, I'll say, you know, they've won the division each of the last 2 years, and they've won the last 2 years, Maz, and it's still been miserable, and they've really been a joyless group. I mean, it's true. And it doesn't feel like there's any joie de vivre, sorry for that, you know, but it doesn't feel like there's anything there, and they have won. So, I don't know, but when I hear that, it's like, why are you so worried about having fun? Why aren't you worried about winning? And then everything else should take care of itself.
Yeah, they don't. Murray and I were just saying this off the air. They're soft. They're a soft team. This is what they are. They're soft. And, you know, can they toughen up? I've seen it happen with guys. Some guys start out a certain way, and then they sort of develop and become a little more mature and a little more, you know, polished and complete. And so I think it can happen with Betts. I don't know that he necessarily articulates it. I told you, with Bogarts, to me, Bogarts doesn't have it in him. He's not edgy enough. He's not nasty enough. But Betts, I think, has got it in him. And I'm just going on that based on instinct and what I hear a little bit. And so, somebody, though, has got to take that team by the throat and say, guys, we're going to have some fun. We're also going to win. We're going to win. And we're going to win in October. That's when we're going to win.
As promised, your calls. Cam and Taunton with a baseball thought. Yes, Cam.
Where did we get this idea from that the Red Sox have a better pitching staff than the Yankees? I just looked this up. Your rotation is Sale, Price, Pomeranz, Porcello, Rodriguez. First of all, you have four lefties. That could cause a problem. Then the Yankees, but the Yankees have Severino, Gray, Tanaka, Sabathia, Montgomery. You might have a slight edge, but it's not that big of an edge. The Yankees have the second and third best pitchers on those staffs, and the back half of the bullpens aren't even close. I mean, your back four is Barnes, Hembree, Smith, Kimbrel, and they have Canely, Robertson, Betances, and Chapman. The Yankees have a better pitching staff than you. I'm sorry, they do.
So hold on, Cam. You're saying that Sales won, and then the next two pitchers would be Yankees?
Yes, Severino and Gray.
Over Price?
Yes, absolutely.
So, Cam, you concur?
No, I don't concur. Cam, here's what I would tell you. The Red Sox, the Yankees starting pitching is not as good as you think it is. And so I'm not telling you they're bums. I like Severino. He looked like garbage in the playoffs last year. No different than what the Red Sox had. He's younger. But if all those guys hit their ceilings, the Red Sox have better pitching.
Here's Jared in Medfield on our Rondo and Isaiah Thomas conversation. Jared, if you could help me there. Stu, help me pop him up. Line 4, Jared in Medfield. Jared, you're up next with Felger and Maz.
I believe this whole situation is all jealousy out of Rondo to, like, start the shoving match with Isaiah Thomas and think that, like, that he deserves the tribute when it's, like, Isaiah Thomas. When he wants a tribute, you can't. He's trying to take it away from him, basically. And, like, he's winning a championship with Paul Pierce and how Paul Pierce gets his jersey retired. And now I think it's
absolutely
all that
jealousy. Jared. That's
Rondo.
Absolutely what it is. It's two guys who are frankly, bit pieces in this whole thing, wanting the stage, and neither of them deserve it. Neither of them deserve the stage they think they're entitled to. Neither of them.
Oh, I don't think Rondo cares about getting any kind of video tribute or any kind of accolades here.
When has he ever said that? You don't think he's got ego?
Yeah, he's got ego, but I think more than anything else, I think he likes being a complete a-hole to certain players throughout the league, IT being one of them. Because
he likes being an a-hole because he is an a-hole, Jim.
Yeah, but I don't think he's not,
it's just what he is.
He's not out there yammering about wanting accolades and telling a team when he wants a certain video, like the multi little peanut is. Like, he looks at it and he sees the absurdity of the whole thing, like I do.
Yeah, right. What Rondo does is rip teams apart from the inside. That's what he does. He gets in there and on a personal level, on a man-to-man personal level, completely poison every room he's ever been in. That's what he does.
Like the 08 room.
And he's helped that Pelicans team to be hovering around a playoff spot, which they're going to get into. So.
Oh, I see. So he's the guy now with the I got it. Oh, it's him.
He's had a rejuvenated
really
year there.
Really ripped apart that 07, 08 Celtics team.
He was a kid. He just got in here, Jimmy. He was a non-factor. George in South Boston. Go ahead, George.
Really ripped them apart.
George, it's not Boston.
Hello?
You're up.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yo, what are you talking about, Rondo not being a non-factor? Did you see game 6 in that season? Who was on the court? You're telling Sam Cassell got more minutes than Rondo?
I didn't say he got more minutes. I never said he got more minutes. I said he was more important.
All right. In crunch time, Sam Cassell didn't even sniff the court. From 10 to 12, who was the best player on that Celtic team? It was Rondo. Go look at the Cleveland series and the Orlando series in 2010. Go tell me who the best player on the court was.
We're talking about the championship year. We're not talking about those later years. I said in the later years he was more important on the team. We're talking about the title year. Who won you the title? Rondo's like 7th or 8th on that list.
No. 5th.
Yes.
He was huge on that.
Huge.
Sorry. Huge.
Oh, that's good. That's please. Like, yeah, he was the best player on the team from 10 to 12 when they didn't win anything.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes, he was more important in 2011, 2012. Yep, he was. In terms of what these guys keep saying is that he's got a ring and Isaiah doesn't. Accidental tourist. Accidental tourist. Just along for the ride.
Rondo has a championship. Isaiah doesn't.
Okay. That doesn't mean anything to me. Alex and Winchester
on the right. I'm a slave to the scoreboard, Michael. That's what I am.
Alex, go ahead, please.
On this whole fun thing. The first one being, you know, the team, I mean, Charlotte was 100% the person they're talking about when they talk about fun. Nobody else, not even David Price. The team takes on the attitude of the manager. As much as I think Joe Maddon is a complete phony, the Red Sox would have gone farther with a manager like him last year. Farrell is just a turd. And the second comment is, where are people like Pedroia when we need all of these quotes? It doesn't have to be Betts, Bogarts coming out with the quotes. It would be nice if it was them, obviously, when Ortiz was there. They didn't need to do it at all. But Pedroia's been here forever. I don't care if Pedroia's hurt or not. It needs to be someone like him. It doesn't always have to be the best players. Pedroia,
so, Alex, let me ask you something.
Yeah,
you think just changing the manager is going to change the attitude? It's going to be an attitude adjustment down there, and it's going to be a better team because of it.
No, I think it'll help, but it needs to still come from players who have been there for a while, not just the people who are 25 years and younger. It needs to come from players that are in their upper to late 20s or early 30s. Pedroia's one of them. David Price is a loser, but he's also one of them. There's other people that can speak up. It doesn't just have to be Betson Bogaerts.
See, this is
right. Doesn't
I disagree with him. I think we saw how it worked with Pedroia. That didn't work. We saw how it worked with Price. That didn't work either. In fact, to me, I want to see these guys take over the team. This is you know, to me, this is a little bit akin to. Do you remember what Lester was like when Beckett was here? It was like he was deferential to him, right? He's deferential, and then once Beckett got out, Lester became more of who we want to remember him as, not the, you know, the dink who was drinking the chicken and beer. Like it felt like he was allowed to become who he was capable of becoming. I feel the same way with Betts. I don't want Pedroia out there anymore. I know what Pedroia is. I've seen Pedroia here for a long time. I got great respect for him as a player, but he's not a leader.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
As far as like team defense, we will shift more. We will. I'm a big believer. I think you get together with the analytical department and you talk about it, and these guys, they're good. They're really, really good. It's not only about the hitter. It's about the pitcher, the hitter, and who's playing defense. And we'll adjust from that, and we'll make decisions for that. You know, we got to get 27 outs, and we're not only talking shifting in the infield. With the outfield that we have, we can be creative too. We can maximize their talent, so... Look for that one, too.
To me, this is something he said a couple of times during the interview today, and I listened to it from beginning to end. And look, I just think that there's information, particularly with a new manager at the beginning of camp. For example, he said, opening day, you should expect Betts first, Benintendi second. Right? He said it, you know, and he said, I drew up a bunch of lineups over the winter, and every one of them had Betts first, Benintendi second, so I think that's a pretty safe bet. So, like, I just, you know, you got a whole new guy here. How does he think? And there was a lot of talk, and in that cut, too, that we just played you about the shifting. You're going to see more shifting, and he talked about analytics. He talked about analytics with Bogaerts. He talked about analytics with pitching changes. So you can already see we're going to get hit over the head with this. I mean, now in his defense, at one point, Cora said, you know, look, there's a lot of analytics, pitch counts, things like this, but you have to have a feel for the game, too, which I was happy to hear. Okay, because I think sometimes you can become a slave to those things. But if you were to go through and listen to this whole thing, and I listened to about the whole 18, 20 minutes, he must have used the word analytics 10 times. I mean, or something like that. So get ready for it. You're going to get a lot of that.
How do you feel about that?
I don't love it. I don't love it. So you know how I am. I mean, I tend to think manage to the situation, see what it looks like. If your starter's cruising and he's handled the next part of the lineup well and he hasn't had any stressful innings, ride him a little bit. If not, go to your bullpen. How's your bullpen been throwing? I think you got to sort of call it on the fly and be ready for it. Now, look, you got to be aware of the numbers, but I don't want him to be a slave to him. I'm eager to see how that goes. But I heard the other thing is I heard more shifts and I went, oh, great, more shifts. That's all we need, more shifts. More ground balls to the right side at the second baseman and right field. Like that's why I tune in every night. I love that.
Okay, phones. Joe and Bill Ricka. Jimmy, if you could help me out. Line 5, Joe and Bill Ricka on the Red Sox and Cora. Hi, Joe. What do you got?
What's the number one thing the Bruins did in the past year to turn them into a top 5 team?
Okay, the coaching change was huge.
Exactly. Now, you know, what's this? Charles, a new guy, playing like he's 10 years younger. Got to give Cassie some of that credit. Right to the Red Sox, Bogaerts, Benintendi, Bradley, they're all, you know, think about how we couldn't steal this manager John's dribble every night at press conferences. Imagine putting up that every day, 6, 8, 10 hours a day, road trips.
So, Joe, let me tell you what. Joe, fair enough. It's possible. It's possible. I would say, you know, there's no perfect analogy, and Cassidy also has Charlie McAvoy, which is, I think, a really significant difference from this team to last team. The Red Sox haven't even done something like that. They're bringing back the exact same team. So, on one hand, I agree. A manager and a coaching change, just a breath of fresh air, it can change things for the better. But the Bruins did do some things on that roster. The Red Sox have done nothing, Maz.
No, zero. And look, the last time that they changed managers, again, you can point to 2013 and say, well, Farrell came in, they won that year. First of all, Farrell had managed before, and secondly, they changed players. They didn't just bring back the same roster. They brought in a Napoli. They brought in a Victorino. They changed sort of the culture of the team. This feels to me like they're stopping short. Is it impossible? Is it unprecedented that they would turn around and have a good year and make a run at a championship? No, but I still think they're short on power. They're short on some talent.
Anthony and Lowell joins us on our Rondo conversation. Jimmy, again, if you could help me, line three. Anthony and Lowell, you're up next. How you doing, Anthony?
How's it going, guys?
Good.
So, you know, I can't understand. It must be so difficult for Jimmy to sit in that studio with you guys and not lose his mind, where everything you say, Mike, 2 seconds after you say it, you must stick your hand somewhere en masse and work his mouth like a puppet, because all he does is simply agree with you. And it's not until that Jimmy chimes in with actual facts on everything. The fact that the two of you sit there and think that
Jimmy Stewart's the fact master now. Okay.
Well, he absolutely is. He's the only one that ever questions anything you say. Absolutely anything you say. Anything you say otherwise, Maz goes, yeah, absolutely, Mike. I agree with you. Absolutely, Mike.
What is your point on Rondo?
I like this guy.
Why don't you give us your thought?
My point on Rondo is if Jimmy, and he probably will do this, went back and pulled clips or articles or whatever from that season, you would find that both of you guys were kissing Rondo's ass and saying that this team wasn't going to go anywhere without their general on the court.
Where'd you come up with that one, you fool? You have any idea what I've said about Rondo over the years? I defy you to find one nice thing I've ever said about the guy. Now you just made that up.
I did not make it up, and I guarantee that Jimmy, because Jimmy's been chiming in on it too, the fact that he will find something saying that he's been a great distributor of the ball and getting these guys in the position and playing defense and doing all that. All the facts that you've been stating for the past half hour about Rondo were wrong. Sam Cassell barely played in the playoffs. No big deal. You brought him in. What the hell? He didn't do a thing. Eddie House didn't do a thing in the finals.
Oh, God. They were more important than Rajon Rondo. They were more important than Rajon Rondo on that team. He was a virtual non-factor on that team. You want to rank the players?
Of course that Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce, three Hall of Famers, yes, were more important than Rondo. But if you tell me that he wasn't third on that team, you're insane.
He's not.
You're telling me
he's not. Posey was more important. Perk was more important. Those guys were more important. Those guys were more important to that run in the playoffs. I don't care about his regular season numbers. They made a bunch of deals at the end of the year. Why do you think they did that? Because they were deficient in some places, and Rondo was part of it. Maz, I don't want to put my finger up your shirt, but, I mean, you can go ahead and weigh in, too.
No, that would be a neat trick to do that from Florida. Hey, Anthony, let me ask you a question. With regard to the Celtics roster that year, why did they pick up Sam Cassell?
Just a veteran, another veteran point guard. A lot of teams do that. Ideas for a long playoff run. They bring in a veteran. That wasn't anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah, go back. Go back and read what was written and said at the time they acquired Cassell, because I would tell you that the reason they did is because they weren't sure that they could win with a young point guard. That's why.
Regardless of whether they were sure or not, Maz, the fact is that he helped them win a title. If you're telling
Barely.
Me that you put any house out there during that championship run, that the result would have been the same, you're out of your mind.
See, but you're a typical Celtics fan. You guys all overrate Rondo. You're overrated from the day he got here. He's not that good.
Anthony, thank you for the call. They would have won with him or without him. Yeah, no, they would have won with him or without him. He was not an elemental part to that team. He just wasn't. He just wasn't. Any Joe average point guard would have won on that team.
Yeah,
it wasn't. It just wasn't. I'm sorry to burst your Rondo bubble, but that's just the fact.
Feels to me like Jimmy Stewart and Jim Murray have their hands up Anthony's shirt. That's what I think.
No, I said earlier, I actually, with the point that I agree with Mike on, is that, you know, it's the big three, Posey and Perk, that were more important. But behind that is Rondo. I know that's
sixth.
Yeah. Okay.
So you have him sixth on the team.
But he blossomed into a player. He was young there, but he did matter. He did matter. And more than anything else, I don't even care about the stats and how it all played out in that 08 run. He has a ring. IT doesn't. To me, he's right. That's all I need. IT is vastly overrating himself. The way he handled himself with this video and when he's going to dictate when it's going to be played, I can understand how that rubbed a lot of guys in the league the wrong way, particularly Rondo, who was here and actually achieved something.
Right. Your issue is with Isaiah Thomas. I get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's all.
I get it. And I'm just telling you, Rajon Rondo, the wrong guy. Wrong guy. Grotesquely overrated player when he was here, especially when it comes to the championship year. Grotesquely overrated. And if he's carrying the torches, he's the Celtic spokesman. Like, I got a ring and you don't? I'm sorry. It's just the wrong guy, that's all. But, you know, they're made for each other. A couple asshats going at it. I just wish they let them play. Like, whatever happened to that? Would you let the two play and go at each other all night and see who comes out ahead and who wins? Like, that would have been interesting to watch, but they can't have it there in the NBA. They're so petrified of anything like that. They're both gone for nothing. Like, that guy, they didn't even do anything.
That guy pissed me off.
Right? Isn't that a joke?
That guy pissed me off. Yeah, he go pissed ahead. Me off. Did he listen to the show the week we were at the Super Bowl when you were telling the world that the Eagles were going to get blown out and I was telling people that the Eagles are going to win the game? Like, do people like that listen to the show, or do they just forge their impressions off of a 30-second segment that they heard because they're a bunch of ass clowns? Like, I'm wondering, like, is that what it is? I wonder if other people actually listen to the show, or they just make a judgment on one thing because they hate you so much, they want to come in and strangle me on those occasions where I agree with you. Sorry, Rondo was never that good.
Felger Nas, the Sports Hub.